Welcome to After the Game, brought to you by EMP Consulting and produced by Gatchel Media. Each episode takes us on an inspiring journey through the experiences of former athletes, exploring how their coaches' wisdom and guidance have not only shaped their athletic careers, but also proved to be a driving force in their personal lives and business endeavors. Here are your hosts, Roger Ingles and Michelle Gatchel.
Today joining us is Jeff Cutler, principal owner of J.W. Cutler & Associates and Cutler Properties. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Roger. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, Michelle, Jeff grew up in Delaware County. He was part of a large family that was in the Olentangy School District, played some high school baseball, and has one of the top brokerage firms here in Ohio. Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about what it was like, you know, as a young kid here in Delaware? And I'm sure you were over at Polaris enjoying all these fine buildings, but you probably remember it in a different stage of life, right?
Yeah, exactly where we're sitting here today is where I grew up. I grew up at the corner of South Old State Road and Polaris Parkway when Polaris Commerce was all farms and not much here. So I enjoyed, had a great time growing up on this farmland, hunting and trapping and helping all the farmers farm. And I got to know all the farmers in the area, and that was the only jobs back in the day we could do was bale hay or get on a tractor and disc. So
literally where we're sitting, kind of in this vicinity, you were hunting and trapping.
Yes, I covered it all.
Wow, this is awesome. I love this.
Yeah, I think Delaware County in the 70s and 80s was a different area than it is now.
Yeah.
I know the first time I read about the Green Meadows complex coming in at Powell Road, everybody was like, gee, I wonder how that's going to change things. And, you know, because it was like taking a all-day trip to go from Delaware to down to Columbus, you know. You just didn't see much along the way, and it's changed a lot. And obviously, Jeff has gotten into real estate and property development here in Delaware County. But before that ever started, Jeff, where did you go to school, and what schools did you attend, and what sports did you play?
Well, I played baseball mainly through high school, and I went to Olentangy High School, but back in the day, we had elementary schools at the corner of Old State Road and Orange Road. It was the old Orange High School, but it was an elementary. I went there 2 years. Then they closed it and tore it down. They sent me up the road to Cheshire Road in Old State and went to Berlin for a couple years. Then they sent us fifth grade on. We went over to where the original high school on Shanahan Road, Hyatt's Road, is, and finished the journey there in high school.
Now, did they have Little League up here in the hood?
Oh, yeah. We started Little League in first grade. My father coached me till high school, and he continued on and coached kids in the district, I think, till he was 60 years old.
Wow.
And I think up until his 70s, he didn't miss a sporting event at Olentangy, a football game. He still went with none of his kids playing. Mm-hmm. He enjoyed it that much.
What was it like having your dad as a coach?
Oh, it was tough. My father was a captain in the Army, so there was not room for error of anything, and it was his way or the highway. So it was a little tough, but I look back, I thought he was awful tough on me as a kid. But looking back, I look at the way kids are raised today, and I think kids today, they really want discipline, and they just don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I think of you.
So I remember the Little League program back in that time. There was a county league. I can remember that, you know, teams traveled to those faraway places like Ashley and Kilbourne and different communities to play. So you kind of got to grow up playing against some of the Buckeye Valley kids or different kids from different schools. As you grew up, did you have any kind of teammates that you can remember, Jeff, now that you look back on and say, you know, this player really kind of influenced me as a person or as a player, or good or bad?
I played with a lot of good players. Like when I was a sophomore, I played with Roger, that's here speaking today.
Uh-oh.
He was a senior, and a lot of sophomores got to play varsity because there's only one junior, I think, four seniors, so we got to play. And Roger had another teammate, Steve Hacks. We had a lot of good teammates. And when you're a sophomore, you kind of lean on the seniors. You look up to them for, you know, leadership. And, you look up to that and you'll learn from it. You learn something from everybody in life.
Mm-hmm.
So high school, tell me about your baseball experience there and your head coach.
Well, we had a very different kind of coach. I got a lot of things that most of the players didn't really like him because he was tough. But some of the traits he taught me was basic fundamentals every day. We got to get back to basic fundamentals every day. Because if you can't do the fundamentals right, there's no reason going any farther.
Yeah.
And I do in my sales, in all my businesses, I think about that every week or two. Like, boy, if sales get slow, we got to get back to the basics. We got to get back to the basics. And if you go back to that, and I teach my salespeople every day. We talk about baseball a lot. And I say, hey, this sales is like baseball. If you don't get up the plate, take a swing, you're never going to get a hit.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get up the plate, you don't have a chance to get a hit.
Yeah, and you know, I know there are a lot of companies, especially here in Central Ohio, but throughout the country, that like to have those former athletes on their staff, especially in sales. And I know a lot of coaches have gone into sales as, you know, an after coaching life and that because they bring certain traits. What are some of the traits that you see from, you know, the athletes that you've had work for you or that are in sales? What do they bring to the table that maybe is a little different than the normal?
Work ethic. They have the work ethic. And I'm a big believer in this. You might not agree with me, but I think it's one thing you can't teach is work ethic. And you either got it or you don't have it. But if you have the work ethic, and I think the biggest thing from athletics, you notice the good athletes really do well in sales and business. It's one thing. If they have the work ethic, the most important thing is the word called passion. If you have passion on what you're doing, I don't care what you're doing. It's not work anymore. It's easy. It's not work if you're passionate about what you're doing. It's the same way I'm sure, Roger, and you coached Ohio Westland. If you had players that really loved to play and willing to put the effort into it, they didn't have to work as hard as an underachiever, your average player, because they had natural talent. And if they had the passion to go with the natural talent.
Gold.
Yeah, it was easy for them. So passion and work ethic. If you have both those, you got a shot.
Yeah. And growing up, you know, you mentioned that your dad drove you hard, but then you had a high school coach who was the same kind of
Coach Bailey, he was kind of a hard nose. And Roger, I know you can hear this today from him. He used to drive in our head. He got mad as about every other day. He used to say one thing I tell my salespeople. He used to drive in our head. Quitters never win and winners never quit.
Huge.
I mean, yeah. Okay. And I think about those thoughts every week. Mm-hmm. Here I am in the 60 club and still thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So after high school, tell me about graduation day.
Yeah, graduation day, that's kind of when my life did a 360. My father was talking to me the week of graduation. He said, what are you going to do with your life? And I said, I have no idea. And he goes, you're going to go to college? I said, I looked into it. It's too expensive. My parents didn't have any money. And I looked at student loans. I thought college was expensive back then, but it's really expensive now. So I decided I had a couple good job offers, and I decided I was going to go to work. And I was 17. My dad came up to me graduation day, said, I need to talk to you. I've got about a couple other things we need to talk about. He goes, today's Saturday. Next Saturday from here on out, you owe me $50 every Saturday for rent. And I said, wow, I didn't expect that one. So anyhow, the next day I said, I better go out and look for a place to live. I might not be living here too much longer. So I finally looked at apartments, came back and thought, hey, $50 a week, that's really a pretty good deal. It's a lot cheaper than that.
Yeah.
So after that, I had a job.
What was your first job?
First job was not a very good job. It was working at Coca-Cola on Twin Rivers Drive on a bottle sorting line, a sweatshop. And that was the second thing my dad wanted to talk about. My uncle was the plant manager, and he said, hey, you have a job starting tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at night till 4 in the morning, third shift or whatever. So it wasn't a very good job.
I was not like, for an 18-year-old, right?
No, you know, I was only 17 when I graduated. 70, 17. Yeah. It was a tough job. It was a sweatshop, and we got cut by broken bottles. Every shift, one of us was getting stitched up.
Oh, man.
Emergency room. It was a fast-paced job.
Mm-hmm.
We had fans on us, but it was.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I knew right then I had to figure something out. I could not work in a factory. I had to figure this out. So I decided, I got a job offer with another company selling construction tools. Not selling, but I was working, started in a warehouse. And a guy that was my boss, he was a couple years older than me. His father was a real estate developer. He said, "Hey, what are you doing Saturday? We can use some help." And they were rehabbing. His dad owned like 60 houses in German Village.
Oh, wow.
And this guy's working with just bought his first double and needed total rehab. So, I'll come down and help you. So I went down there and helped them and realized that's something I was interested in. So I got thinking about real estate at 18. I got into the business. I think I got my license at 19. Bought my first house when I turned 19.
That's pretty big for a 19-year-old. Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to pay that rent.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back to that process, Jeff, of here you are, you're working at Coca-Cola. You're in a job, it's fast paced, it's a hot environment. What's the thought process now? You get this opportunity, but I mean, mentally, what were you thinking about at the time? You know, do I go into this? Do I get out of this Coca-Cola thing? Do I go into this construction thing? I mean, were you thinking about, did you see your company down the road that you have now? Or did you just, what was your process thinking at the time?
When I was helping him work on this double in German Village, he was telling me back in 1977, well, I'm going to rent each side for $400 a month. Okay. And I'm looking at apartments. Back then I could rent an apartment for about $329. And he was showing me that, well, by renting the one side, he can live in the other side for free.
Yeah.
So I got the ball rolling. So my whole thought process at 18 to 19 in real estate was I was going to get into the investment side of it and build up a portfolio of properties. That way I didn't have to work a job I didn't want to work.
Yeah.
Because if I could have my expenses down low, I could work any job I wanted as long as I didn't have a lot of expenses. Mm-hmm. So, and then the first house I bought, you know, at 19 years old, I couldn't get a mortgage. So I found a guy to sell me a house on land contract. He owner financed it for me. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got started, fixed it up, made a few thousand on it. And I bought my next house and just kept working my way up. Started out with a $25,000 house and ended up living in a $2.5 million house.
Yeah.
So.
Well, as you bought those first homes and you started working, were you doing most of the work yourself? Were you hiring out?
I wasn't the most handy guy in the world, but I could do some of it. And I just, friends we went to high school with, we're all all need to work back then. There wasn't that many jobs. So everybody was, a lot of guys were learning trades. And,
Did they have a Delaware, like a DAC here?
Yes.
Back then, did they?
Yeah.
A trade school? No. Okay.
Yeah. It's much.
It's getting better.
Yeah.
We need more of it. We have got to get young people in the trades.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about that before. For young kids today, they come out and college debt is obviously so overwhelming for a lot of kids, especially kids that don't come from families with means or haven't been able to save money for college but want to go. Mm-hmm. That the trade skills is in schools are a great way to go because
six-figure income.
Yeah.
I have two electricians that work for the company that I hire, and the owner told me the other day, he said both those young men make $100,000 a year.
Nice.
Yeah. So what advice do you have for a young kid today, Jeff, that maybe wants to think about going into the trades a little bit? I mean, what would you tell them today if somebody was sitting here in front of you that, hey, Mr. Cutler, I'm thinking about going into trade. How should I do this?
Well, this is how I would handle it. I would tell them, learn a trade, because if you get tired of it and don't want to do it, you can always fall back on it. You can always feed yourself and your family if you know how to trade. You don't have to do it your whole life. You might find out you're not cut out for it, but if it provides a good living for your family and if you need a job, you can always fall back on it. If you ever need to work on if you're an electrician or a plumber, you can always work on your properties, your neighbor, your family. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a life sentence, what I try to convince them at.
Yeah.
I think too many young people think they get in something, I got to do this for the rest of my life. Not every job's a life sentence. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have made a lot of money that I don't have to do what I don't want to do. I do what I want to do because I enjoy it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. I'm very passionate what I do.
So, you know, going back to having your dad as a coach, what part of that, I mean, truthfully, buying your own house at 19, that's not normal. What gave you that drive? Was your dad's military background? And
I'm glad you asked me that question. I tell this story a lot. My sister tells the same story because she ended up being very successful too. And we were affected. We had five brothers and sisters, and both our parents were one of 11. There wasn't a lot of money to go around. And probably one of the biggest influence on my life as a child, you know, we all, before we got on school bus, we'd get a bowl of cereal or cream of wheat. We all sit around the table. And every morning, my mother had her checkbook out, was balancing her checkbook, paying the bills. In about two or three days of the week, she didn't have money to pay the bills, and she'd be in tears. So we, me and my sister, starting like in fourth grade, we had jobs. We were mowing yards, selling skin of muskrats. We were helping paying for groceries, and we'd help my mother out. We probably gave her $20, $25 a week, but you know what? She always paid us back someday. So I learned that the biggest thing I'll never, you can ask my sister to this day, she said, we talk about this all the time. It was probably the biggest thing that made me think about how I did not want to live. I didn't want to sit there worried about if I was going to have the money for groceries every week.
Yeah.
It was a big influence in my life.
Yeah.
To give me the drive to get out there and have a better life.
So you got your realty license when?
1980, 81. Yeah, so I was probably 20 years old.
Okay. Back then, I think today, if you go to, do you have to have a sponsor or something or work for someone?
Yes, that's I started out as a realtor. That's a separate license than a broker's license.
Okay.
So in 19, I was in the business about 4 years. You had to have back then to sit for a broker's license, you had to have at least 40, back in the day, 40 transactions. And I was not planning on getting my broker's license, but I was in a continuing ed class, and they were telling all of us that if we didn't have a bachelor's degree starting in 1988, you cannot sit at the state level to get a broker's license. So I decided, wow, I'm going to see if I can't get that now. So I went back to school, took the classes, and passed the broker's test, flying colors.
So you got your license. Then you go get your broker's license. When did you start your own company?
Not till like 87 or 88. I'd like to talk about my first big real estate deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you know the attorney, Roger. I get a call. I was probably 23, 24, and I get a call from an attorney in Delaware, Ed Flahive Sr. Ed calls me. You can ask his sons that are attorneys. I don't know why, but Dad always liked you, even a young guy, because he thought it was just interesting. You were 20 years old out there selling real estate. So he tried to give me business all the time. So he calls me up one day. He said, Jeff, I need you in my office tomorrow at 1 o'clock. I want you to bring a lot of listing forms. You might come out of this meeting with a big listing. I go, what are we talking about, Ed? He goes, well, I have a client of mine, the largest developer in Columbus, who's in financial problems. He owns all the land from Lazelle Road to Powell Road. It's 1,200 acres, and it's in foreclosure. Said, we got a meeting set up with the bank, the developer, and me and the bank's attorney, and you're going to be sitting outside the room while we're negotiating. When I call you in there, you come in there. So I didn't know what was going to happen, so I brought all these listing forms. And so I comes in and goes, well, you didn't get all of it, but here's what we're doing. The farmer that's farming the land from Lazelle Road, it's about all the land from Lazelle Road to about where Polaris Parkway is, like 600 acres. We sold it to him for what the banks owed. And at the time, this 1983, this land now sells for $1 million plus an acre.
Yeah.
It was 1,900 an acre. The farmer got to buy that, like half of that 1,200 acres.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And the rest of it, I got listings on a lot of the land up towards Powell Road, across from Walker Woods subdivision today. Had a lot of one-acre lots with roads in, and a lot of one-acre lots was approved for septic, and the bank was owed $12,000 a lot. And between the bank, Ed Flahive, and the other attorney, said, here's the deal, Jeff. For every one-acre, every lot you sell, we're going to pay you $900. So I got all these lots listed, and they listed it. 40-acre track with me for like $2,000 an acre. And back then, you know, rates were, we were financing the lots through like Bank One, which is Chase. They were financing lots with 20% down for 14% interest.
Wow.
But I sold most of the 1 acre lots to people that I went to high school with. The one that are from the area. And they were a great deal at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll never forget, I had a 40-acre track. I won't mention the buyer's name. Just put me through the ringer, him and his attorney. We had it in contract for $1,900 an acre. Mm-hmm. And this attorney, I won't mention his name, he's gone and dead now, but he fought on every little easement that was in the title work, title insurance. He just raised Cain. So anyhow, the guy ended up closing, buying his 40 acres for $76,000. It was just gave me a hard way to go for the whole transaction. And then 4 years later, Polaris is announced, and he ends up selling it for, he ended up selling it for $1.6 million to MI Homes.
Nice.
Wow. And the guy gave me the biggest, you think I ever heard of anything out of that guy thanking me for selling it to him?
No. So Jeff, obviously networking and communications were huge for you.
Yeah, right. Let me just touch that on that subject a bit. One of the biggest listings I got right after that transaction, when Polaris Parkway was announced, it was going to get built someday.
Mm-hmm.
One of the farmers I work with owned where the Speedway station here is at Polaris Parkway in Allstate. He owned that 50 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And I baled hay and worked for him. And the only reason I got the sale of it, when I was just graduated high school, and I was going down the road one day, and it was clouding up, raining. I had a friend with me in a car, and it was clouding up, and there was baling hay out in the field, and they're trying to cover up hay wagons, starting to rain. They had all these hay wagons. So I said, we got to pull and help these guys. So we went in and helped the farmer. He had one kid out there helping him. We got all the hay wagons covered with tarps. We got on tractors.
Saved it.
We got on tractors, got all the hay in the barns. And he was so thankful that someone stopped and helped him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I ended up selling his farm for like $2 million.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And he will never give me, farmers will never give you a listing on their farm. They'll tell you, when you get me this, I'll sell it.
Yeah.
And he had paid, I think, $3,000, he told me, for the 50 acres. And when he said, when you get me $2 million, I'll sell it. And we got that pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, it just goes to show you, though, it's you never know when you meet somebody the impressions you make on them.
Yeah.
What's going to happen down the road for him? I mean, I know I had a player whose father won the lottery, and he ended up having a large portion of land sold to him fairly cheap. And it was because the people who lived on that farm remember when he was a kid and they had a cow stuck in a culvert, he'd went in and helped them get it out.
Yeah.
And they said,
people don't forget things like that.
They remember. They remember when people were kind and when they went out of their way to help. Jeff, now tell us a little bit about the companies that you have now and what all you guys are involved in.
Okay. Probably the most passionate business I'm in right now for the last 25 years is building and developing self-storage for properties in Central Ohio, from Hilliard to Sunbury to Delaware, Shawnee Hills, Dublin. I really enjoy that. My later years of life, I get a real kick out of doing it. It takes a lot of work. We take the raw ground and we take it through the entitlement process, through the zoning, through the engineering, and working through what I call the bugs and bunnies, trying to fix all the problems from environmental. We had to deal with a lot of environmental issues.
Yeah.
We had a property last year where we hit solid bedrock 2 feet underground during excavation. So you're dealing with a lot of issues, variables that you don't know until you get into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it very challenging. I find it really challenging dealing with zoning boards, from township trustees, the mayors. What I've learned through the years, I was very fortunate in the 80s. I got to work for some of the biggest land developers around here. The Ortlett family that did Highland Lakes. They did a lot of the big subdivisions, the golf course communities. I got to do land acquisition for them,
Nice. Which
I learned a lot. I worked for a guy, he's kind of quite a character. He was the founder of Wendy's with Dave Thomas. Get to do a lot of land acquisition. He owned about 600 KFCs. So we did a lot of retail site location work, trying to find the best site, learn about demographics.
Put a KFC, yeah.
You learn about demographics and you learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So your company has been operating tremendously in Central Ohio, obviously.
We do deals all over the state.
Do you?
You
know, okay. We've
done some in Dayton, we've done some.
So
Union County, Morrow County.
Let me ask you about
upcoming change in Delaware Licking County?
Yes, yeah, so that's probably the biggest thing that's happened in Central Ohio in my lifetime. With Intel coming in, now Microsoft has just bought 157 acres for 300,000 an acre right next to it. We have other companies.
Did you say 300,000 an acre?
Per acre.
Wow.
That's way up from that $600, $900 an acre back when you started, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, it's going to be probably the biggest game changer. If you research Intel, what they did in Chandler, Arizona, it kind of affected, oh my goodness, probably a 40 to 50 mile radius around the development where they were located.
Mm-hmm.
It affects a big area. We think it'll affect all the way to Heath, Ohio, Newark. And we think as far as north, it's going to affect it to Mount Vernon.
Mm. Mm. Wow.
From housing to, you know, apartments to warehousing. The big kick right now in Delaware County is we're so short on warehousing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of them in the planning stages. You're going to see a lot of warehouses popping up. The logistics, it's just we're short in Central Ohio on warehousing. Warehousing's got about a 1% vacancy rate in Central Ohio.
So what do you think the biggest challenge is for the county, Delaware County, because of Intel? What are the challenges that they're going to have moving over the next 10, 20 years? Is it infrastructure? Is it, you know, providing services?
It's all the above.
Yeah.
Our biggest problem for years has been sewer. Mm-hmm. It still is a problem. We have a big problem with the NIMBYs.
What's that?
Not in my backyard.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So zoning, people do not want change.
Mm-hmm.
Columbus is really going to struggle. We're so short on housing in Central Ohio.
Yeah.
Affordable housing. We have none.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when affordable housing starts at $400,000, $450,000 for a, you know, a 1,600 square foot home, that's not affordable housing. Mm-mm.
No.
Our biggest challenge right now is interest rates are now up in the 7 range, 7.5 range. And on our commercial construction loans, we're looking at 8, 8.5% to borrow money for to build a warehouse.
Wow.
Or an apartment complex. So the cost of money has really went up. So that's going to slow things down a little bit.
You know, I'm curious. Like, I remember hearing the stories in California where they would take an acre and put 15 small little houses on an acre for when they needed housing for some things moving in, like Silicon Valley, right? Yeah,
that's the problem we have. Nobody wants high density. They want big, you know, neighbors. Nobody wants to see all these houses. But here's the flip side of it. Today's millennials, they don't want to mow an acre lot.
Yeah.
They want a small lot. They don't want to take care of all that. And in my age group, I'm not sure I want to take care of a big lot anymore either.
Yeah, right.
Well, you see all these homes over in the west side of the county with these Epcons and different type homes that are, you know, standalone
patio homes.
And, you know, they have somebody mowing it for them, somebody plowing the snow and doing that because people don't want to do that. And, you know, the bridge area over in Dublin has grown tremendously because a lot of, like you said, the millennials like to have an area that they have everything's convenient, right? You can walk down to the restaurants, walk to your fitness center and do different things. But they don't want to spend their time when they aren't working.
Working.
They don't want to own a car. They want to be able to walk or use an Uber.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and be able to, you know, not have to drive someplace.
Yes.
And so what do you think about mass transit in Central Ohio? Is that something that's going to have to come with this growth?
It's someday, but you know, under the Obama administration, what they were planning, I think it was, you know, from Cleveland to Cincinnati, it was like, I call it a low-speed rail.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be efficient enough.
Yeah.
You know, 45, 50 mile an hour. We've got to do something different.
Truck them in a different way.
High speed, get them there quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Similar to what some of the European countries.
We have so many bright people in this country, you know, the Elon Musk, the Jeff Bezos of the world. I'm telling you, they're going to come out with something pretty neat.
So, Jeff, if I ask you now to kind of put the elder hat on, right? You've been through it. You've played ball. You started your own companies. You bought your first home. I got a young male or female student in my classroom, or I've got a boy or girl at home, and I'm raising them, and I'm saying, I want the best advice I can get from Jeff Cutler to tell me what are the things they should think about now going forward that you've learned in your life.
Well, what I see where we made mistakes, I think with young people, they should start internships early. I think it should be early as junior high in the summer. I think it should be mandatory, at least 4 weeks every summer. They do an internship every year and start thinking about the future. I know with today's schooling, it didn't like an art, you know, we could have jobs when we were in school, but I think schooling's harder on kids today, and there's not time for them to work part-time jobs. They need to stay focused on their classroom work, and because education's very important.
Yeah.
I would start there. I think internships, we got to get these kids thinking about a career earlier on. We can't wait till their junior, senior year and they start looking at college. Oh, what do I want to do? Mm. We got to start way earlier than that. Mm. We're way behind the eight ball.
Yeah. Do you have trouble finding employees or your contractors that you hire? Are they having trouble finding staff?
I have projects I'd like to do. We can't find anyone to work. We're short on everywhere from excavators to every trade. Mm. We are starting to see more Hispanics filtering into the area, into the trades.
Yeah, and that's something that I think a lot of people don't understand, that with the immigration restrictions that we have, that a lot of construction jobs historically have been filled by Latin Americans and Hispanics and, you know, trade workers from Mexico. That as we reduce those numbers coming to the country, it means more Americans got to pick up those jobs. And that's where we have failed, I think, as a country, is not preparing our kids to go into those trades, thinking that everyone has to go to college or everyone has to be at this level. No, you can, like you mentioned earlier, you can get a great job and you can make good money and a good life for yourself by just doing a trade.
Jeff, thanks for joining us. It's been a great conversation. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to After the Game. Join us for each episode as we explore the powerful intersection of sports, coaching, and life. The stories shared show us that indeed there is life after the game, and that the lessons learned from coaches are invaluable assets in the game of life.
Do you know what you want for your organization but encounter roadblocks getting there, or are frustrated when things don't go as you hoped? You're not alone. Many organizations fail to execute their strategies successfully. Executive Management Partners can help. We provide unsurpassed results to help you manage your challenges. Whether it's leadership training, program facilitation, assessments, strategic planning, revenue generation, or team effectiveness, EMP delivers excellence through personalized, solution-based services. Contact us at www.empartnersconsulting.com. That's empartnersconsulting.com.